Hello and welcome to the Travel Commons podcast. My name is Mark Peacock. This is the second Travel Commons podcast. Today is May 21st, 2005. We've got three topics for today's podcast. First, my experiences, thoughts about the evolution of the Southwest Airlines customer. Also want to talk about some interesting reactions to the growth of these new travel meta search sites, Kayak, Sidestep, Mobissimo, a lot of recent press, and I had the opportunity to talk to a couple of friends of mine in the travel industry, and I think they've got some interesting thoughts around these new sites. And finally, talking about the differences between how Mexicans and Americans vacation in Cabo San Lucas. Was down in Cabo with my father for a week vacation, and ended up hanging out, I think, more with the Mexicans than the Americans, and got some thoughts about that. This week I'm in town all week, off the road, so not doing this in a hotel bathroom. However, I am paying for this week with a tough one next week. I'll be in Columbus, Tampa, Phoenix, and San Diego next week. 7 flights, 4 cities, 5 days. I want to thank all those who subscribed after the first podcast last week, and especially those who left comments on the Podcast Alley board and the TravelCommons.com website. I appreciate those comments, and I would encourage, I'd appreciate any more. So a couple of ways you can leave me comments. You can send me comments directly to comments@travelcommons.com, or just go to the travelcommons.com website and leave comments attached to this podcast posting. Or also, I keep a watch over the comment board for the Travel Commons podcast on podcastalley.com. So I look at that every couple of days. So and I leave my responses right there on that board. So if you feel more comfortable doing that, that'd be great. I also started using feedburner.com to track these subscriptions. I think it's a great service, and I'll tell you, it was very exciting to watch the subscriptions grow sort of day by day, especially after Travel Commons appeared on the first page of Podcast Alley and their 5 newest podcast list. Saw a big spike in subscriptions, and I hope those who did subscribe, I hope you're getting out of this podcast what you hope for when you subscribed. Also, I'll tell you, watching the subscription growth has given me sort of the kick in the pants to get this second podcast out. Even though I was at home all week, it was a busy week. Sometimes I think it's easier to do this when you're on the road. Also, want to give a shout out to Kurt Taylor at EmptySeat.net. I just listened to Kurt's podcast this morning. I think it's a good example of a personal travel log. Here's a little snippet. I thought he gave a nice little statistic that I had never heard.
At any given point in time, I read a statistic once, there are at least 50,000 people at 30,000 feet traveling, and that could be anywhere in the world. That's a phenomenal number, and you know what? I truly believe it may be higher than that.
Like I said, I think it's a good example of a personal travel log, some personal thoughts and reflections on long-haul travel. Also, in this first podcast, there's a sightseeing tour in a Shanghai shopping center. I'll put a link to that in the show notes. But give it a listen. I think Kurt has some interesting things to say, and I'll tell you, it sounds like he's been putting some serious miles on his body over the past 5 years. So, Kurt Taylor at EmptySeat.net. Again, I'll have links for that in the show notes. Every day I get you. So here's the first topic for today, the changing passenger profile on Southwest Airlines. With the bankruptcies of United and US Air, with the near bankruptcies of Delta and American, it kind of feels like the only guys who are going to be left are guys like Southwest Airlines and JetBlue. And indeed, you see the announcement past day or so ago about the merger of U.S. Air and America West, where they're going to try to figure out, and this one's going to be interesting, try to figure out how to do both a premium and a low cost airline. I don't know, Southwest has everybody running scared. And I've been actually spending a lot more time on Southwest lately, especially when I'm city hopping out on the West Coast. Sort of my current modus operandi is I'll fly a traditional carrier, typically American or United, from Chicago into my first city out west, say Phoenix, and then back from my last city, say San Francisco. And quite honestly, because I can usually get an upgrade up into first class, and for a four and a half hour flight, that can be worth it. But then once I get out there, I sort of peg the two long ends, and then once I'm out there, I just use Southwest to hop between the cities as needed. So Phoenix to San Jose to L.A. back up to San Francisco. And it works out great. I've got the flexibility with Southwest to be able to go in and out. And they also have, quite honestly, out there, they also have great flight schedules. They've got a lot of flights, and they go off pretty frequently. It changes, though. Back in 2001, I was back and forth a lot between Chicago and Kansas City. And Southwest then also had the best flight frequency. But I'll tell you, it felt like a flying bus, sort of a 500-mile-an-hour Greyhound bus. Walking into one particular flight, the gate agent announced that 45 people had stayed on the plane as through passengers. On Southwest's 737, that was about a third of the load. I don't know where the previous stop came from, or I don't know where the previous stop was. But from the accents, I guessed it was somewhere down south, maybe Louisville, kind of what it felt like. After we boarded, the plane was about three quarters full, and I'll tell you, it was a heavy mix of leisure travelers, and that sort of showed in the drink cart traffic. Even though we were on a morning flight, most of the drink orders around me were for beers and mixed drinks, and even then, the mixed drinks weren't even Bloody Marys. People were going straight for the vodka and the bourbon. I felt that was sometimes you need an eye opener, but that felt more like an eye shutter. My club soda and lime was definitely a lonely exception. The flight was also louder than usual. Normal business flights have a couple of conversations, but mostly it's quiet as people are either hammering away on their PCs or reading their USA Today. This flight, though, I'll tell you, was quite lively. People were having very animated conversations around me. Maybe that was aided a little bit by the drink car traffic. But now, 4 years later, and I think about my 2 weeks ago when I was doing this hop between Phoenix to L.A. to San Francisco, which is a pretty typical sort of triangulation for me. I'll tell you, Southwest is much more accepted by the business traveler. The typical Southwest flights that I get on now seem to be at least 50% business traveler, if not sometimes 75%. And with the associated decline in early or midday drinking, a lot more folks doing the club soda and lime routine. I think the move to web check-in has significantly reduced the concern and the hassle of Southwest's trademark cattle car boarding. You no longer have to show up at the gate an hour ahead of time or so to get one of those little plastic cards with a number above 25 or 30. And that, of course, gets you in that first boarding tranche or first boarding herd, I guess you could call it. Instead, you go to their website, and you can do it from the office, you can do it from home, you get a boarding pass with an A on it, and then you can show up at the gate at a reasonable time. Actually, a little known fact that I use, well, what's not little known is that you can hit their website after midnight on the day of the flight and get a boarding pass. What I think a lot of folks don't know is that even if you don't have a printer, you go in, you get the boarding pass, you don't even print it out. And then when you go to you've checked in, so now you've got that A. And then you go to the airport, you go to the kiosk, swipe your card, and they'll ask you if you want to reprint the boarding pass, and you say absolutely. And boom, you've got your A boarding pass. You're one of the first 25, 30 people on the plane, and you've got a good shot at either getting an aisle seat in the front of the plane or an exit row seat, which are absolutely the coveted business traveler spots. So though the lack of assigned seating is still a problem for a lot of folks, and you think about it, there are so many uncertainties, so many things out of your control in travel nowadays, and very much more so as, whenever the TSA gets a new whim, we're taking off a new piece of clothing. Frequent travelers just they yearn and they grasp at any kind of certainty, and that's what a lot of times makes that makes that assigned seating so important. But I'll tell you, if you get an A, if you end up with an A boarding pass, I've never had a problem getting a decent seat on a plane. Like I said, an aisle seat in the first half of the plane. Nor have I ever had problems finding overhead space for my bag. Indeed, I think sometimes with the heavier leisure mix, leisure traveler mix. It's actually, I think, easier to get a rolling bag on these planes, because a lot of the leisure travelers will check all their bags ahead of time. So I no longer cringe when Southwest is the right flight answer. Our next topic, meta-search sites for travel. There's been a lot of heat recently around these sites, Kayak, Sidestep, Mobissimo, are the usual suspects, though the big boys have entered the market too. AOL with a kayak-powered site called Pinpoint Travel, and Yahoo with its Fairchase offering. A couple of studies that have been announced in conjunction with some travel industry trade shows suggest that these search sites are growing. One says that they're already getting 40% of the travel buyers, and another study says that these guys' market share has grown 300% over the last 6 months. You know, the first wave of internet travel sites, Expedia, Travelocity, Orbitz, focused on being more efficient travel agencies, using the internet, investing in technology to lower costs for booking tickets and providing customer service. I think you guys remember the late 90s disintermediation war cry. That's what Expedia, Travelocity, and Orbitz were all about. These new sites, though, use what I would call the Web 2.0 approach. You can tell I've been listening to too many podcasts from Doug Kay's IT conversation sites. But they're built on a search paradigm rather than a transaction paradigm, pulling bits and pieces of information from other sites and then assembling and presenting it all in one place, their own site. And so the focus is really on, you know, sort of the interface, the user experience, more on making the consumer efficient than making the transaction efficient. I mean, if you think about it, I think these sites are gaining popularity. Now, whether they're getting 40% of the travel buyers, I don't know. I don't even know how you figure out that number, but they are getting more popular, and I think they are because they do automatically, or they've automated what most people do manually. I mean, myself, if I've got an unfamiliar flight leg, the first thing I'll do is log on and check Orbitz. I really like their matrix display. But then, you know, I'm going to go more than likely, if it's not a multi-carrier trip, I'll go and book it on the airline site. Why? Well, easy. No service fee, number one, and typically I'm getting 500 bonus miles per leg. So, you know, that's sort of my MO. Now, most people, especially leisure travelers, will check 3 to 5 sites, perhaps an Expedia or an Orbitz, and then an airline site and a couple of hotel sites before booking their travels, because, you know, through experience, they've been taught that different sites will display different deals, and you've got to go hunting to get the best deal. Now, the search sites technology light model. They don't have booking engines. They don't provide customer service. They're basically screen scraping a bunch of information and representing it. This technology light model leaves them a bit at the mercy of the travel suppliers. Rather than generating revenue from the transaction or the booking, the search sites are looking for referral fees from the airlines, hotels, and rental companies. And this is the danger in this model, and that is if they sort of succumb to the need for, you know, if they lose their objectivity and start taking money for higher placements, I think that's where this model is going to be in real difficulty. But the other piece of this difficulty for them with this technology light model is right now a number of the suppliers, you know, they view these search sites as parasites riding on their infrastructure, their capital investment, chewing up a lot of cycles, a lot of computer cycles and network bandwidth, responding to their requests. One e-commerce VP compared their 300,000 look-to-book ratio that they get from, say, a Sidestep to the 8-to-1 look-to-book ratio for his brands.com site and the 2.5 or 3-to-1 look-to-book ratio from their live reservation center. Another supplier turned on a relationship with one of these metasearch sites. It completely flooded their IT back end, completely pegged the meter on all their mainframes. And then at the end of the day, he said they only got 5 incremental reservations in that day. He said they immediately turned that relationship back off. A lot of these suppliers, the airlines, hotels, are beating their breasts saying that these search sites just further the commoditization of their brands, of their products. I'll tell you, that horse is already out of the barn. These sites aren't going to do any more damage than the suppliers have already done themselves. Franchising hotel brands to shoddy operators, the elimination of in-flight meals that turn more airplanes into picnic grounds. If these sites succeed, and that's not a given, from my personal experience in running all three of these, Kayak, Mobissimo, Sidestep, just recently over the past week, I didn't see any compelling value proposition. But if they do succeed and they continue to iterate and improve the model, it could really twist the online travel model. And let's face it, the online travel model is one of the most successful models on the internet, lagging behind maybe only file sharing and porn. But again, I think it depends on whether these sites follow the Google model, and that is, you know, they give straight up ranking and separate sort of pay for placement, or whether they, in a hunt and a search for revenue, whether they trip down the other path and start the pay for placement game. Today's last topic, vacationing with the Mexicans in Cabo San Lucas. I took a week's fishing vacation with my dad at the tip of Baja California in Cabo San Lucas. We've been talking about it for years, and we finally got around to doing it. With his age odometer clicking over 70, I feel a bit more urgency to do these things. I don't want to be looking back and saying woulda, coulda on these. So I met up with my dad at Denver Airport, and we flew Frontier down to Cabo. I'll tell you, that was a great service, the Frontier service. Nice planes, nice people, complete with live DirecTV in every seat back. And on the international flights, and the flights down to Mexico, and they've got quite a number of them out of a good Mexican service out of Denver, that DirecTV was free. My dad had done some searching, Expedia, Travelocity, same usual suspects we just talked about in the last segment, and found a great hotel deal in San Jose del Cabo, the next city over from Cabo San Lucas. Something like $99 a night, including all meals and drinks. When we arrived, we found a nice, reasonable hotel just down the beach from the Intercontinental Resort, as a matter of fact. As we walked around, we found ourselves to be some of the few Americans staying there. It seemed a bit more targeted at Mexican tourists. The accommodations were a bit more Spartan. No Weston-style heavenly bed here, just a mattress on top of a plywood platform. The meals were a bit hit and miss, too. The breakfasts were good, but the dinners were just steam table variety. However, on our fishing days, we did what a lot of the Mexican guests did. We took our catch to the restaurant across the street. One night, we filled ourselves up on spicy tuna rolls and grilled tuna steaks for less than $15. Of course, you know, we brought in 4 or 5 pounds of fresh, line-caught, yellowtail tuna. You can imagine, put that many adjectives on the front of a fish, you can imagine what that would have cost at Whole Foods. Our first day in Cabo San Lucas, I saw 3 barrel-chested guys in camp shirts, close-cropped hair, goatees, Oakley sunglasses. They're walking a bit unsteadily, stiff-legged into the grinning Marlin, which was a fun bar. And these guys were walking into the grinning Marlin, probably looking for the hair of the dog that had a hold of their head that morning. These guys were, to me, sort of the classic American tourists in Cabo. The Mexicans from our hotel just seemed to be happy to hang out by the pool, playing some sort of picture bingo game called out by a couple of girls who were the entertainment directors, Whether you're drinking beers at the swim-up bar or eating fish tacos from the poolside fryer, you know, or just walking up and down the beach. I don't want to stereotype, but, you know, if I was looking for a trend, sort of an 80% trend, I don't know. These folks seem to be having a good time with and a relaxing time without the more expensive accoutrements we've come to expect as standard fare at resort hotels, and that, quite honestly, I think jack up the price of a vacation. They seem more focused on relaxation than novel experiences. My dad and I followed suit, and we had a great vacation. Okay, that's it for the second Travel Commons podcast. I appreciate any comments, either directly to comments@travelcommons.com or on the travelcommons.com website, or at the comment board on of podalley.com. I troll and hit there every couple of days, so if you like, leave some notes there. I'm on the road all next week, like I said. I would imagine that between 7 flights, 4 cities, 5 days, I will have more than enough material for a third podcast the end of next week. And I would be very surprised if one of those topics after that many plane flights was not some sort of a TSA rant. So I look forward to it. Take care, and I'll talk to you guys soon.